The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Pedalin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 409 to be broadcast on Wednesday, August 21st, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below, and we'll try to get right back to you. Otherwise, you can send me an email at bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, which I will update today, by the way. I think I'm a week or two behind. Ron's rant of the week. California. I know you have better weather than most of us, and that translates to more cyclists on the road, but how many cyclists get hit by cars every year? Well, each year in California, here's a great stat for you. Motor places, you know, places to have lots of cars. More than 100 bicyclists lose their lives, and over 10,000 are injured in accidents. Given that bicyclists and motorists have equal rights and responsibilities on the road, following safety laws is essential to minimize the risk of accidents. Okay, here it is. I'm going for it. This is all part of the rant. It's the speed, stupid! Okay, according to the campaign finance site Open Secrets, automakers, hang on tight, this is a good one, spent $49 million lobbying in 2023 compared to $2.2 million spent by advocates for highway and auto safety. Guess what? They don't like us. They just don't like us. And the fact that they're willing to spend $49 million to lobby for their right to be on the road versus 2.2 is, that's a problem. That's a big problem. That's my rant this week. That's what I got. It's the big bad bully in the room. That's what it is. The bullies are just, they're going to continue to be bullies as long as we continue to support them. And remember Ron's request, his challenge to you. And this is just a challenge, very simple. Are you a competitive spirit? Here we go. Take one day out of your week and ride your bicycle instead of driving your car. I'll bet you can do it. You might surprise yourself. Anyway, positive side. I'm thumbing through my different feeds here, and I went over to Streets Blog, and I found this really cool article about the speed humps in Providence, and they're called Car Kryptonite. I like it. I like it a lot. So Providence, Rhode Island has put down, and I'll get to this in a little bit later in the show, but Providence, Rhode Island has put down premium textured rubber speed humps. And I'll give you a site as to where you can find these things. They're not expensive. They're really cool. And they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. Really cool. So anyway, we'll talk about that in a bit. Car Kryptonite. Like that. Tour de France Femmes. It's complete for another year. Yeah, 8 days of racing. The women's Tour de France is over. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, I went over, I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of it this year because I was so busy. Too busy working for the Steeplechase bike tour, which we had last weekend, which I'll get onto that too. But anyway, but I got to go through some highlight videos and check a few things out, and it was a wonderful edition of the tour. It looked like Demi Vollering was about to recapture this year's race, and then with a spectacular finish, Kasia Nulidoma.
Kasia Nimodoma.
Kasia Nimodoma, right. Being crowned, she won the tour by 4 seconds. It's, as someone said, a quote here, the greatest finish in the Tour de France I've ever seen. And that was the commentator who was commentating on it, which is really, really cool. So what was the last stage? It was Alpe d'Huez, of course. Right. Big attacks, lots of things going on. Once again, from the Olympic road race all the way to this race right here, some of the best women's bike racing I've seen in years. The old cat and mouse is gone, and the actual aggressive attacking on the hills, the crazy descents, I mean, just wild stuff. Just wild stuff. Good stuff. It was very, very exciting. And it came down to, I'll tell you, both these women came across the line. Demi Vollering got off her bike and collapsed on the pavement. She was done. She gave it all she had. And so did Nulidoma. She was just completely exhausted. They put it out there. It was fun. It was exciting. So if you didn't get a chance to watch it, I believe it was broadcast by Peacock NBC. And you can go back and watch the episodes. There's some good footage there. It's really good stuff. So check it all out. So here's your trivia question. What was the closest men's Tour de France? I'll give you a clue. All right. This is the clue. It wasn't 4 seconds. That's it. That's all I give you. We'll talk a little bit more about that and give you the answer later in the show. The Vuelta is about to begin. Another positive thing. It's not just about to begin. It has begun. It began this weekend. There are two stages. The opening time trial was won by American McNulty. Brandon McNulty won the time trial. He started out. He was the first one to wear the winner's jersey. And there you go. That's really cool stuff. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. And hopefully I won't spoil alert you too much. Ron's Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips for the Week. Okay, this isn't really a Mechanical Minute. This isn't really a tip for the week. But what I had to do, I wanted to fill something in here that I was feeling really strongly about. And here it comes. This is time for a goodwill story. Or two. Or three, okay? In these interesting times of unrest in our country, I have two things of note. When I was out painting the roads for the steeplechase bike tour this past week, I had pulled over with my flashers on, getting ready to mark the road, and a young driver stopped and asked me if everything was all right. How often does that happen? Okay, and I said, oh, everything's just fine. He goes, well, you know, I saw you here with the flashers on. Just wanted to make sure everything was okay. And, you know, just checking to see. And you know, he's a young driver, probably, I don't know, maybe around 20 years old, I would guess, something like that. But how nice and refreshing. I told him how nice it was to have someone, you know, be concerned.
His mama raised him right.
And yeah, his mama raised him right. You got it. So that was a really cool thing. And then later on at that day, I was getting near dark. And yeah, I was still out painting roads a number of nights now. Hi, Franny.
Hi.
And I'm out painting roads, and I was putting down some arrows, and a guy comes out to the end of his driveway, and he looks at me and says, are you okay? And I went, yeah, I'm fine. He goes, oh, I was just checking. I saw your flashers on. I just wanted to make sure you were all right. And I explained to him what I was doing, and he went, oh, yeah. He goes, that bike tour that comes through here every year. Yeah, he goes, oh, we'll look forward to seeing them on Saturday. So that was kind of cool. But just the fact that I had two people that checked to see if I was okay versus, you know, how many times have we been...
Somebody gets annoyed because
you're
in the way.
Somebody's annoyed because you're in the way. Right, exactly. Of course, they don't get annoyed when the mail truck's in their way. They don't get mailed when, you know, never mind. I'm not going to go there. But last thing on my list. Okay. No, I got two more. Two more. All right. So we have the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which happened this weekend, which is, you know, that's definitely a huge positive side thing. We raised a bunch of money for four local nonprofits who can really, really use the money. It's a really wonderful event, and it's been going on for 33 years, and that's a really cool thing. But a cyclist on this weekend's Steeplechase Bike Tour, he was from Columbia CrossFit. That's all I know. I don't know his name. I know he was wearing a CrossFit shirt. It said Columbia CrossFit on it. And he was there with his family. His wife and his kids did the 18-mile rail trail ride. He had a couple of young kids. And he volunteered when asked, because we had our 97-year-old cyclist, Saul Nesselroth from Storrs, was riding his trike in the Steeplechase on the 35-mile ride. Yes, folks, there is life after 60. Lots of it. And Saul is the proof of it all. It's really, really great. I actually brought Saul down to WILI Radio last week, and we put him on the air, and Wayne Norman interviewed him and talked to him all about, you know, his life as a cyclist, etc. 97. He rode 35 miles. Got that? I don't want to hear any excuses anymore. That's it. So anyway, he showed up to ride the ride, and he didn't have anybody to ride with. Maybe his riding partner had taken off or whatever. But anyway, Saul's there. He wants to ride. But, you know, it's kind of nice to have some companionship when you're 97 years old. And so it was announced in the registration area inside that we were looking for someone who could accompany Saul. And this young boy with his young family stepped up and said, "I'll do it." And he did. And he rode with him the whole way. And Randy and Matt, actually, shout out to Randy and Matt Friedman, too. They also rode in the last 3 miles with Saul.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, which is great, which is really cool. So that was like a really, really cool thing, and I would love to know what that young man's name was. It was very, very kind of him to do that. What I'm getting to here, and I've got one more story for you, and here's the last story. A cyclist on this weekend's Steeplechase Bike Tour. this is great. Had a catastrophic failure of his rear derailleur. In other words, the unit was literally ripped off the bike. And
hate when that happens.
Yeah, I hate that when it happens. Yeah, right. It happens. But it does happen. And it happened to you. I was in New Hampshire. She called me for a sag to get her home. I was in New Hampshire. That wasn't going to work. Anyway,
yes.
We had a friend. Anyway, so the sag wagon driver, who was driving the Click Kitchen, one of our nonprofits, van, stopped to help and realized that the bike was not repairable, and that you know, we weren't going to be able to do anything with it. So he went into the back of his van and gave him his personal bike so he could finish the ride.
Really?
Yes, really.
Just like
absolutely. Absolutely. He gave him his personal bike so he could finish the ride. So I'm just putting this out there that I have four stories here of people helping people and going beyond. And in these times, you know, it's
where
just,
people are being jerks.
It's just really, really, really nice to see.
Yeah.
And it was all related around, yes, sorry, folks, what Pedlin Ron talks about all the time, the bicycle. Yes, nice people ride bikes. Got that? We like people who ride bikes. People, they're kind, they're generous, they're thoughtful. I have four examples here, and two of them weren't even bike riders. They were just concerned about what was going on and being very, very helpful. I have a restored faith in the human spirit from this. On a sad note, I'm going to go on into content here. We have a big, 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 big community loss to area cyclist and friend Beth Hankins. Beth had a bout with melanoma, and it did not go well, and unfortunately she passed away at the time that we were out riding in the Steeplechase Bike Tour. So John and Beth Hankins, I have known them ever since I moved up into this area. I came into the area in 1975, and John's dad was a big bicycle rider, and he had his kids riding bikes and, of course, doing lots of athletic things. And John and I used to run together, and we did a lot of that. And Beth also used to run with me, and you know, they became cyclists because, you know what you call old runners, right?
Cyclists.
Right. So anyway, Beth lost her battle, but, you know, she did accomplish something on a bucket list that she and John had put together before she was diagnosed with this. And they rode 100 miles in all 50 states. So every single state, including Hawaii,
yep,
they rode 100 miles in Hawaii,
yep,
and Alaska both.
Yep, they did.
So, you know, just to show you the dedication of this woman and what she did with her bicycle, not to mention all the other things and the other ways she touched the community. I just wanted to mention that we're going to miss you, Beth.
Yeah. Can't believe you're gone.
Yeah. So, moving on, I'm going to go back to the story I had talked about earlier about the car kryptonite in Providence. And this came from Streets Blog, where I get lots of wonderful information because they're into this sort of thing. So anyway, there's these like pads, like big rubber pads, but they're speed humps, and they put them down in various places like South Main Street in Providence, which is a pretty busy road. And they're getting like incredible results. And there's a video on Streets Blog that shows them in use. And it's phenomenal. You want to slow cars down? This is the least expensive traffic calming method that you could possibly use. I was on Facebook this morning, and Bike Walk Bolton, Barbara Amodio, had posted a picture of Cedar Swamp Road in stores, which we used for the Steeplechase bike tour, by the way. And there's speed humps that have been put on that road, and they really work. They really do slow traffic down. But the speed humps that were used on that road and on our area roads around here, they're all asphalt. So, you know, obviously there's going to be some cost to putting that in, and there's going to be some wear and tear to those, etc. These things are made out of rubber. They're big, and they sit up like a table, and they come back down, and they're great. They're really, really cool. And I'm going to give you guys all a link to this, too, because I was so impressed with them, I had to do a little research to figure out where the heck do we get these. These are great. I am going to introduce them to my local town here. And I encourage you to do the same thing in your local towns. I will put this up on, I'll put the reference to the site up on my Facebook page in connection with this video. And you can check it out, because I just think these things are brilliant. And they're not expensive. That's the cool thing. I think they're made out of like a recycled rubber. I'll find out more here in a minute. But anyway, unbelievable at the way they work. So the quote here is, we wanted to pause because we wanted to do more of a study to see what's the best way to do traffic calming or to keep people from speeding. Department of Public Works Director Patricia Konyafag told the Providence Journal, which everyone calls Projo. There's a lot of different methods for that. There's speed bumps, humps, lumps, speed cameras, roundabouts, signage. So we just want to be a bit more thoughtful about placing these things in terms of what really works best. So the folks from Kansas City say speed bumps are great, by the way. So they put these things down, and they don't really have any data at this time to you know, see if it has made a difference as far as, you know, bicycle and pedestrian incidents. We'll call them incidents. That's a little scary. But I'm sure that the figures are going to go in the right direction. They seem to be at least they seem to be, at least when drivers are used to seeing them, a tactical method of slowing people down. And they are, if you need to find them, okay, I'll give you a site that I found them at, but there are a few different companies out there, and you just Google premium textured rubber speed hump, and there you go, and you'll find them, and they're wicked cool. So as I did Google that, I found a company called the Traffic Safety Warehouse. Who would have known? So they have parking lot safety and speed bumps and humps. And I found this 35-inch by 19-inch by 2-inch high, okay? And they're $79 a piece. They're not expensive. So they're like fairly inexpensive. You put two of them together on the road and it totally changes the approach. And they're very visible because they're black with yellow striping going across them. Super easy to see. I was just completely impressed. And if you, of course, buy, you know, if you buy 10 of them, they'll give you a better deal. So it's just a really, really cool thing, and I think you should check it out. The site that I have here is it's trafficsafetywarehouse.com. And I will again post this on the Facebook page because these things are brilliant, and if you want to see how they work, you go to Streets Blog, and when you go there, you're going to look at last Friday's video, and it was car kryptonite in Providence, Rhode Island. So wicked cool. I think they're great. I'm totally impressed by what I see here. And they, when you install these, they take 4.5-inch lag bolts, 2-inch lag shields, and 1/2-inch washers. That's it. So you can put them right into the pavement, and now you have a very, very nice way of doing this. There's also a way of putting them down on the road adhesively. I would think that probably wouldn't work here in New England, but, you know, we'll see. You know, we have weather, cold, hot, weird. Anyway, we got all that kind of stuff going on. Each of these humps weighs 38 pounds. They're not that heavy. They're not hard to transport to a site to put them down, and they're brilliant. I'm going to go to the town engineer in Mansfield. I'm going to show him these and say, hey, check this out. Want to slow people down? Really? Those silly little signs that say, your speed is, they don't work. I mean, they may work for some people, but I find that, well, you know, they work for you because you're not an 18-year-old teenage boy that wants to see how fast he can get it to register when he goes by it. I think that they encourage as well as discourage speed. Oh, man. So I'm not real big fan of those. Cameras, I'm a pretty big fan of cameras. You know, you get caught on the camera, you're going to get a ticket in the mail. That works. But until we slow cars down, the cyclist and pedestrian deaths are going to continue to rise. It's just going to happen. We are... What's the number one distraction in a car right now, Fran? We just heard this on TV last night.
Texting.
Number one distraction. It's more distracting than drinking.
Than DUIs, yeah.
Than drinking. Got that? So DUIs are down, but texting is up. Distracted driving. Not good.
Well, everybody texts, not everybody drinks.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody texts, not everybody drinks. You're absolutely right. So that's a big, big deal. And so the idea here is traffic calming is the answer. And that's where we will leave this discussion. And again, I will post this over on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. So if you want to present this to your local town and say, hey, You know XYZ Road where all that traffic goes flying through and we've had three pedestrians hit this year and one cyclist hit? Here's an idea, and it doesn't cost you much money. It's well within the budget of the Public Works Department, I guarantee you. So anyway, that's it. And I kind of have an in at the Public Works Department too, mm-hmm. So I work for them occasionally. Doing stuff at the transfer station. But anyway, I can't wait to show them this because this was just like a brilliant solution to an inexpensive solution to a problem. And as I have told folks before, when approaching your town or your when approaching your town or your politicians or your town council or whatever it is, always go with solutions, not with problems. Always go with solutions. When you go there solution-minded and present solutions and don't just go with one solution, come with two, you will be taken far more seriously than if you go there just complaining about something. If you just complain about something, they're going to go, yeah, we heard this before. Oh boy, here's another one. Right? But if you go there with a solution and say, hey, check this out. This is the coolest thing. And put some energy and enthusiasm into it. You know, give it the pedal and round touch. And, just let them see that you're looking to help, not hurt. And that's a cool thing. So anyway. Premium textured rubber speed humps. Cool, wow. Cool stuff, man. Cool stuff. Inexpensive, easy to get a hold of, easy to put down. Piece of cake. Beautiful. Anyway, moving on. That kind of should have gone in my tip of the week, right? But anyway, we'll move on from that one. Let's see, what else do I have here? The Tour de France Femme. Let's just take a look at this. And just like that, the 2024 Tour de France Femme comes to an end. It was another wonderful edition of the Tour. And Kasia Nuladoma was crowned the GC winner by 4 seconds. So here's how the Alpe d'Huez race ended up finishing. And it was down to the wire. So... Kasia had she had the yellow jersey, and you know it was Demi Vollering. She was the winner last year, and she attacked, and there were lots of attacks, and eventually Vollering made it happen, and off they went, and it came down to, you know, she needed a lot of time to catch back up and or get back into the yellow jersey, and it looked like she had it. I mean, it really looked like she was riding great. She was riding like a champion. She was riding super hard. She kept sticking the elbow out to try to get the rider with her to pull through, and of course there was some talk going on. You could see there was definitely some talk. But Vollering wanted that yellow jersey. She wanted it bad. And problem was, so did someone else. And it came down to just final unbelievable efforts. I will say that Nuladoma, that girl can ride downhills real fast. That's where she got her time back. They interviewed her afterwards. She said, you know, she was feeling a little drained, and she said so she drank all of her water and ate everything she had in her pockets and then went. And she said, I just got a renewed bit of energy, and she was flying downhill, and that's what she did. That's where she got the time back. And it was really cool. Anyway, fun stuff. So it was cool to watch. If you got a chance to watch it, it's certainly definitely something to watch. Vollering did win the final stage, and it was an epic finish. There's no question about it. 4 seconds, folks. 4 seconds. Both ladies were, you know, laid out on the pavement when they got done. They were done. they were done. But it was exciting. It was very, very exciting. And between this and the Olympic road race, I've got like kind of a renewed interest in the women's bicycle racing scene, because there's some development going on here. There's some really, really cool stuff going on. And anyway, we'll keep watching. We'll keep talking about it. But right now, we have to move on. And let's see here. So what else we got here on the screen here today? A short recap on the 2024 Steeplechase bike ride and walk on Saturday, August 17th. We had unbelievably good luck with the weather. It started out overcast in the morning, which made it so it wasn't too hot, which can be a problem in August here in Connecticut. And the sun came out later in the afternoon, but really the weather was kind of perfect. It was kind of perfect for the ride, which was really, really cool. And we had pretty much the organizers, me being part of that also, we all concluded at the end of the day that everything just really went pretty smooth, and we're pretty happy with that. So earlier in the show, I had mentioned something about the trivia question, what's the smallest winning margin at the Tour de France? Well, guess what? It was the women's Tour de Femme. That's what it was. That's the shortest, 4 seconds. But if you were able to guess that the next closest one was 8 seconds in 1989, it was with Greg LeMond. And Greg LeMond won it by 8 seconds in 1989. Very, very cool. Mr. LeMond showed up with the infamous aero bar on his time trial bike, and that's where he did it. That's where he made the big difference right there. They were made by a company called Scott, who is, they're actually a ski company in Europe. They're big name in skis, downhill skis, alpine skis. They make poles and all sorts of interesting stuff. But they had developed this kind of U-shaped, we'll call it horseshoe-shaped, item that clamped onto the bars, and it enabled Greg to get down a little bit lower and hold that low aerodynamic position a little bit better. It also gave him a chance to you can actually pull back on those a little bit too, and then every triathlete after that had one on their bike, because that kind of opened up the whole time trial aspect of cycling. So 8 seconds. Second on that list, in 2007, Alberto Contador won by 23 seconds. In 2006, Oscar Pereiro won by 32 seconds. In 1968, Jan Janssen won by 38 seconds. 1987, Stephen Roach won by 40 seconds. I just want to point something out here. It's 21 to 22 days of racing, and this is the final results. In 1977, the infamous Bernard Thevenet won by 48 seconds. And in 2017, 54 seconds, Chris Froome. And in 1964, into our smallest winning margins at the Tour de France, Jacques Anquetil, 55 seconds in 1964. So, kind of cool, you know? There were some very, very close Tour de France finishes. Who would have guessed? But the women have now put down the gauntlet. There it is. See if you can beat that one. 4 seconds. That's crazy. That's nuts. So, anyway, kind of cool. Definitely something to watch. If you haven't watched it yet, I would definitely look into that. It's really neat information. So let's see, what else do I have here? Oh yeah. So here we go. How do bike lanes help with congestion? This is simple, right? Seems simple. Let's see if we can, yeah, now it wants me to prove that I'm not a robot. Mm-hmm. Nice, huh? Love that. So how do bike lanes decrease traffic? This is kind of a simple thing, but I thought I would just talk about it, just because what happens when you add bike lanes to city streets? Do they really keep the cyclists safe? Do they ease the increase of traffic, or do they ease or increase traffic? So this came from The Guardian, and the quote here is, "Traffic is no more than people making decisions about where, when, and how they travel from one place to another. This means taking road space away from cars in favor of bikes in many cases can reduce congestion because you're making car travel less attractive while enticing people to travel by bike, public transport, or walking." There you go. "All evidence points to bike lanes having a positive impact on congestion, pollution, and our health. In addition to making city streets less crowded, biking, public transportation, and walking increases exercise, decreases carbon emissions." This is kind of a big DUH, but you know, here we are. We talk about this a lot on the show. Induced demand. Increasing road capacity tends to attract more cars, leading to congestion. That brings us to the infamous statement, deadly by design. That's what we call the DOT. Conversely, reducing road capacity by introducing bike lanes can encourage biking and discourage car use, alleviating congestion. When a city's public space is connected by a robust bike lane network, the demand for biking is created. Traffic evaporation. When the road capacity is reduced, some car trips may disappear because of convenience or congestion, either because people choose alternative modes of transport or because they combine or eliminate trips altogether. So there's a pretty big change there. Many short car trips could be replaced by cycling, walking, or public transport, suggesting a significant potential for reducing car dependence. And this is from, because it's The Guardian, in Hackney, East London, 17% of residents had some roads in their neighborhoods closed to motor vehicles. And those neighborhoods have seen a 40% reduction in traffic as a result. In Paris, which we have talked about a couple of weeks ago, roadway restrictions have contributed to 5% drop in car trips since 2010, while the city has also seen a 54% increase in bike use. There you go. So, you know, this is not rocket science. It's not. It's basic engineering and traffic flow and traffic engineering. And when we talk about traffic engineering, and I know I talk about this a lot on the show, but this is so important, we're not just talking about cars and trucks, okay? There are other ways to travel. And the bicycle is a solution to a lot of problems. I saw the mayor of Willimantic on on Saturday. He was riding in the Steeplechase Bike Tour. And I every time I see him, poor Tom, every time I go see Tom, I go up to him and say, "See, bicycles change everything." I have to get my little dig in every now and then, because they really do. You know, if you let it happen, it just can make an amazing transformation. We have a situation coming up here very, very soon, both in Willimantic and also in Mansfield Stores. And we have the influx of, between both universities, close to 30,000 people approaching our neighborhoods. And that's a lot of change as far as traffic goes. It brings in a lot more traffic. We often comment about rush hour on Route 195 in front of Fran's office, and how hard it is to get out of the parking lot when the kids get back, because there's lots of cars. There's just lots of cars. And of course, UConn and the developers around UConn that are building all these giant apartment complexes have made it very easy for you to park a car there. That's against my, you know, what if you just couldn't park your car? What if you just didn't have a place to park the car and you had to rely on an alternative type of transportation, like a really good bus service, which UConn has, And we actually have a nice bus service that runs back and forth between Willimantic and Storrs. And that's all there. That same bus service goes all the way into Hartford. We've got a transportation center up in Storrs, which you can relay to if you're in Willimantic and you want to go to Hartford. You can either do it from Willimantic, but easier so, take the bus up to Storrs, go to the transportation center, and in you go. So you don't really need the car unless, you know, I don't know why you need the car. Anyway, you need the car for certain things, I'm sure. Some people do. But the fact is, our local transportation system is getting much better, and it really is, there is definitely a bonus here. And all of our buses, by the way, they all have bike racks on the front too. So let me put it to you this way. If you're going to travel from where I live or from Willimantic up to Storrs, you're going to climb 800 feet easily. And you're going to do that in, like, from my house, maybe 7 or 8 miles. So that's over 100 feet a mile, sometimes 800 feet a mile. It's a lot. And you could put your bike on the bus, ride the bus up, and then ride back home. And then you get to go down all that. That's kind of fun. So if you start thinking about it and thinking about ways of transporting yourself, you have to think different. That's all. You have to think different. It doesn't have to be, that difficult. And hey, if 97-year-old Saul Nesselroth can ride down to my house to have me fix his bike and then ride back up, and he lives up there, what's your excuse? I'll leave it there. So anyway, Fran, did you have fun in the steeplechase on Saturday?
I had a very nice time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good event. Lots of nice people. Everybody seemed very, very satisfied. I did get a couple of complaints. I put a gravel section in for the for a 40-mile gravel ride, which I thought was a really, really cool ride. And actually got some really positive results from, our friend Kim did it, and she said, oh my God, that was a great ride. I loved it. But then we had a couple of other people that said it was a little too gravelly for them. Anyway, yeah, it was gravelly. I can tell you that. The DEEP, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, has been working on Fayette Road up in the Natchug Forest, and there was some soft gravel and big chunks of rock, and it was a little more mountain bikey than some people were prepared for. And then there is an incredibly difficult climb going up out of the forest away from the ranger station, which is, it's challenging. My friend Christian said, that's quite a hill there. And it's a big hill. And it's on gravel. So it's not like super smooth, but you can do it. You can do it. It's not that bad. And it adds to a beautiful part of the ride, because you're basically riding your bicycle around the second largest state forest in the state of Connecticut. Not that we have large state forests, because we're a little tiny state, but it's still pretty impressive. So we did get, we got some positive and some negative on that. Of course, I don't expect every year that DEEP will be working on the roads going through there. It looks like the construction they're doing right now is basically building the elevation of the roads up over the water levels, because they had some problems with, we're getting a lot of climate change here. We're getting a lot more rain than we used to get. And it's, we've had it, and when we get rain now, it's not always just a nice gentle rain. Sometimes it's just really horrid downpours, and they create a lot of flooding. And we just had that a day ago, yesterday in the state of Connecticut. There was all sorts of damage. A few people lost their lives because of flooding, believe it or not. We never had this problem before. But anyway, we do now. And so there it is. And Yeah, we're going to have to deal with it. But anyway, they're fixing the road because it is a dirt road, a gravel road that wraps around the forest. And it is a very, very cool gravel road. They are fixing it so that it won't wash away again next time. And hopefully that will hold true, which will be very, very nice. But it was a little rough. I was out marking that road the night before because I had run out of time and volunteers. And I can tell you, as I was driving down that road, I went, uh-oh, there's going to be a complaint or two on this one. But, you know, mostly everybody had a good time. They did fine with it. So if you have the skills to ride a gravel bike like gravel bikes are to be ridden, it's nothing at all. This past weekend was also a very famous ride called the D2R2, which is up in Deerfield, Massachusetts, I think is where that starts and finishes. And they have a 100-mile and a 100K gravel ride, 70% gravel roads. It's intense. There's even a 23% grade on gravel that you have to climb on your bike, and it can be a real test. Unfortunately, it was the same day as the steeplechase, so maybe I lost some of my gravel clientele to that, but because it's a pretty serious ride. But I thought maybe, you know, 40-mile ride would be reasonable because it's not too much, it's not too little. We also have an 18-mile ride too that we did, and that's a much easier venture because that's kind of an out and back, and the out is up and the back is down, and 2% grade, gravel rail trail type thing. So anyway, the steeplechase, I think, was a big, big success. I got lots of positive feedback from the promoters of the event and people who rode in it, and we'll be back next year. So, and hopefully we'll be back with a few more people. Numbers were down. I'm going to move on now to the Vuelta, men's Vuelta. Yeah, the Vuelta a España. Here's the last of the big three, okay? We've got the Giro, we've got the Tour de France, and then we had the Vuelta a España. The Tour of Italy, the Tour of France, and the Tour of Spain. So these are big multi-day stage races, 20 to 22 days until they get done, and we're off and running. And like I said, Brandon McNulty of the U.S. won the opening time trial, and Wout Van Aert, as of stage two, is in first place from Visma Elisa bike, and he's got a 3-second lead over Brandon. So we've got kind of the Primoz Roglic is in there. He's in eighth place. He's down 20 seconds. João Almeida, another name that appears a lot in these big races. He is 22 seconds down. So it's still very, very tight right now, but it's only 2 days in. I have not seen the results yet today, and I will not tell you what the results are today. I'll let you guys figure it out on your own. But the course is interesting, and you know, we don't know who it's hard to know who's gonna win this. Stage three, that's today's, is 191.2 kilometers, so it's a healthy race. And we'll see what happens there. I wish they had the breakdown. Like I had the site from the Tour de France, and every time you'd go here, they'd show you the actual hill breakdowns and all. And maybe they will. Oh, here it is. Here we go. So today's stage is hilly. They're listing it as hilly. Tomorrow's stage is 170.5 kilometers, and it's a mountain stage. So that should be a very, very interesting day. We'll see, because they're both the Tour de France, the Giro, and this race, they're all like really popping mountains in right away. So it's kind of interesting to see. You would think that they would start out easy. They used to start out easy. They used to start out with like a number of flat stages, and you know, it's all with the sprinters, and then the sprinters would, you know, basically they would form the as I call it, the back away or the gruppetto, and just try to stay within the time restraints. On Wednesday, there's their first flat stage. It's 177 kilometers. Thursday, they go right back into the mountains again. Big mountain stage, 185 kilometers. And then it's hilly on Friday, and Saturday, medium mountains. Sunday, mountain, big time mountain. So yeah, it's going to be another one of those great climber races. We will not see the winner of the Tour de France and the Giro on this one. He's cooked, he says. He said he's very, very tired. He needs a lot of rest. That was his comment after winning the Tour de France. So tired was he that he did not compete in the Olympics, which he had originally planned on competing in. And some of us have questions as to maybe there was another reason why, but I'm not going to go there right now. So anyway, the Vuelta is on, and it's happening, and it's really cool, and there's going to be a lot more. The rest day will be on Monday, and so we've got some good racing coming into the weekends and finishing off of the mountain stage on Sunday. So see if they have a profile preview on this one. Sometimes you get lucky here. Yeah, except all the cookies. Oh, yeah. So Sunday's race, three major climbs, with a downhill finish after the third climb. It looks like it'll be an exciting race to watch by the looks of the profile here. You can find all this when you go, if you go to lavuelta.es, and that will put you there, and you can check out the official website of the Vuelta a España, which is very, very cool. So right now, we're just brand new into it, not tons of excitement, although it was really cool to see the American win the time trial the first time and the first day. That was kind of an interesting and cool thing. So we'll have more to report on in the next couple of weeks, of course. So anyway, what else did I have here on my list? I think I got one more thing I can cover, and then we got to wrap this thing up. The bicycle industry, Shimano bike related sales are down 21% year over year in the first half. What's going on out there? I think that actually, as I perused this little article from Bicycle Retailer, it was because of the fact that we now have a large inventory problem, and the inventory problem we have is the opposite problem we had when COVID hit. COVID hit, and we had an inventory problem, being that everyone wanted a bicycle and there were none to be had because we had issues getting them in the country, and we had issues with people going to bike shops to buy them because you couldn't go into public places. And anyway, they sold out faster than they were coming in. Supply demand. Right now, there's way more supply than there is demand. So still, if you're looking to buy a bike, this might be a good time to do it. There is going to be a change because there were some tariffs that were put in place by the Trump administration, believe it or not, all the way back then, that are in effect as of June of this year. So everything is going to rise dramatically in price on imports coming into the country. Something that was not created by the current administration, but by the previous administration. Gotta love politics, huh? Sad. Anyway, they should leave our bikes alone. That's what I say. So, going on to events. The Vuelta a España goes from the 17th until the 8th of the 8th of September, which is also the same day as the Mansfield Hollow Damned at the Dam cyclocross race. And we'll get to that in a second. The second maid show in Portland, Oregon will be held August 23rd through the 25th. So that's coming up this week. And the CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series will be starting in a week. Looks like August 28th is the first one, September 4th, and then the 18th and the 25th for the the other three. And so that's a really big deal because we're going to have a couple of cycle there. It's a Wednesday night series and it is a training race. It's just a training series. So you can get out there and get your cross legs together and, you know, just see what you got and get ready for Mansfield Hollow, which is the season opener of the Project Mayhem Cross series coming this fall. We are labeled as Damned at the Dam. There's going to be a new fancy hoodie sweatshirt, new design this year. Thank you, Jeremy, for doing that. And it's the 41st year of one of New England's classic races. And that will be Sunday, September 8th at Mansfield Hollow State Park. Other things on the calendar, the Project Mayhem series, I've got a list of them here. The following ones, September 14th in Haddam Neck, September 22nd, New Haven, Connecticut, October 6th in Newtown, Connecticut, October 20th in Portland, Connecticut, November 17th in Wallingford, Connecticut, and December 1st in Guilford, Connecticut. Yeah, big series, brand new, lots of excitement, lots of cool things going on. I secured over the weekend, I secured a Mexican food truck plus free coffee and hot chocolate at the Mansfield Hollow Race. Woohoo! Cool, huh? Always wanted to do that and got some really good connections. Big shout out to my friends at Click Kitchen who were involved with the steeplechase for putting that together for me. So we're gonna have it a lot more festive than we've done in the past. So it'll be a fun time. So anyway, what else do we have here? Lime Rock Park Epic Gravel Ride, Sunday, October 8th, 2023, in Lakeville, Connecticut. So it's based on the legendary Lime Rock Park in Connecticut's Litchfield County. It's a gravel fondo promising to become an autumn classic in the Berkshires. Riders will be offered three distances, the Epic at 68 miles and 5,000 feet of elevation, 14 gravel sections, five of which will be timed, two rest stops. And the Explorer, which is 53 miles, and the Express, which is 18 miles. So stay tuned for that. Finishing points. So what do you think of the Tour de Femme? That was pretty cool, huh? Yeah, pretty neat stuff going on here. Women's bike racing is exploding right now. It's very, very cool. 4 second difference. 4 seconds, really? Wow. Cool. And hey, Vuelta is on. We do love our listener comments, by the way, so please keep them coming. So 2024, what are you going to do? Are you going to ride more miles? Are you going to ride to commute to work or around town? Are you going to ride for better fitness or simply enjoy the bicycle rides you take more by slowing down and smelling the roses? I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. I want you to get loud, right? Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads, price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. It's all true. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment, or you can send an email to me at BicycleTalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you would like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. I'd love to hear from you. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get out!